visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're getting reports, apparently, of a school, of a shooting at a school board, which is notable because apparently the perpetrator, using a can of spray paint, sprayed the circle and letter V, apparently an homage, if you will, to V for Vendetta, which is a refreshing change from all those phony swastikas that we always see being sprayed all over the place here. But apparently that's the new, and there's a terrorist threat against the DC Metro. Basically, it's nonstop booga booga, right now. All right. I want to talk a little bit about the situation in Korea. South Korea's army chief has just resigned or been forced out. Apparently, they're saying it has to do with a controversy over his property investments. This sounds to me like a convenient fiction that maybe this South Korean army chief wasn't aggressive enough in going after the North and trying to start a new war. Most professional soldiers don't want to start wars. If they've been through one, if they've seen what war is all about, they're very reluctant to actually start a war. Usually it's the rear echelon types who've come out of the military schools and they've spent all their life in the government halls and they've never actually had to serve on a front line. They're all gung-ho about it because their idea of war is what they see on movies and TV shows. But anyway, this guy has resigned or been forced out, and it may signal a change more than likely to a more aggressive hardline individual in that position. Meanwhile, Russia has waded in and saying that their military is on high alert against the possibility of a confrontation between the two Koreas. Oddly enough, seems to be sneering at North Korea, which puts Russia and China at odds. The situation is getting very, very out of control. And it's in stark contrast to the story that we were seeing yesterday, where Moscow was now sort of moving away and from NATO, becoming more confrontation with NATO. So the bipolarness of the world is starting to blur again. All righty, let's see. Homeland Security is still out there trying to recruit neighborhood snitches and busybodies, and what's going on is really very simple. The government is terrified of the blogs, of the alternative media. They're terrified that people are talking with each other because the people are not saying nice things about the government and the corporations. And they're trying to come up with some way that they can scare the people into staying silent. It's exactly the same thing the Nazis did. The Nazis tried to create the illusion that there was an informant on every single block, in every single building. And even if there was, they still can't hear all the conversations that are going on out there. But the fear that you might be overheard by a snitch was used to basically convince the German people to shut the heck up, to stay silent, to not speak out about all the things they saw going on around them. And of course, if you remember the end of World War II, you will realize that the Germans should have spoken out when they had a chance to change things. The Germans paid a very terrible price in post-war Europe for not speaking out. And I'm not cutting them any slack because Hitler was trying to scare them into staying silent, because it's not going to work here either. But that's what they're trying to do. Homeland Security wants snitches. They even have an iPhone application out there now. Ooh, you can be a snitch on your iPhone. Push a button and report whatever it is you're going to report. They're not really going to use the information. There's too much information already coming in from snitch lines to ever use. It is a propaganda stunt to scare you into staying silent so that you won't talk with your family and friends over the holiday season about just how badly the U.S. government and Wall Street have screwed up what used to be the greatest nation on earth. They don't want you to talk to each other. Just watch the TV networks and stay silent and believe as we tell you to believe. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The Grainmaker Grain Mill. Handmade goodness since 1999. Handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each mill is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain mill, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain mill will be passed down through generation.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
On the fifth day of global warming, Al Gore gave to me $5 harvest, $4 gas, 3 failed automakers, 2 melting ice caps, and the fear-mongering documentary.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And joining me on the phone is Dr. Keanu Tsai. And Dr. Tsai is the gentleman I spoke of earlier in the show. And in fact, yesterday, he's a professor over at Kapi'olani Community College, where I used to teach a long time ago, and he is making an issue over Hawaii's statehood. And so without further ado, Dr. Tsai, welcome to the show. Thank you for spending time with us today. And fill us in a little bit more details on what was being written about in that article about you versus Obama et al. Regarding the status of Hawaii.
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me on the show. Appreciate it. The case was filed on June 1st, and it's a matter of a violation of an executive agreement entered into between President Cleveland and the Queen, whereby the Queen temporarily yielded her executive power to the President in order for him to do an investigation of U.S. troops that landed illegally on Hawaiian territory over the protests of the Hawaiian government, because the Queen knew that if she apprehended certain insurgents who were going to declare themselves to be a provisional government, she would run into the Marines and thus risk bloodshed. And Hawaii at that time was a recognized neutral country as like a Switzerland in the middle of the Pacific. So that executive power assigned to the president, that was President Cleveland who received it and accepted the assignment, and he investigated. And he concluded the government was illegally overthrown. He must restore it. And then he entered into a second agreement with the Queen, whereby before the executive power is returned and the government restored, the Queen would grant amnesty to all those insurgents who participated because they participated at the urging of the U.S. diplomat, U.S. ambassador that was assigned to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Queen agreed, and on December 18th, she signed the second agreement for the Agreement of Restoration. Now, from that point on till today, what you have is the willful violation of that executive agreement, which binds successive presidents. So my complaint that was filed in the U.S. Federal District Court under the Alien Tort Statute, whereby an alien, because myself being a Hawaiian subject, the injury suffered by the violation of a treaty, and that would be the executive agreement. And I'm alleging in there that certain injuries were committed against my person back in the 1990s and early 2000, and that constituted a breach of that executive agreement. So the case is really about the executive agreement and the dispute that I have against Barack Obama, Clinton, Gates, and Admiral Willard from the Pacific Command, because they willfully did not administer Hawaiian law, which is called for by the first executive agreement that called for that, that caused that breach. And that's the basis of the lawsuit.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've studied this issue for quite some time, and I'm already well aware that under the terms of prior treaties, the U.S. government in occupying Hawaii was required to enforce Hawaiian law, not U.S. law. And I was certainly aware of Lili Okulani's abdication agreement, in which she said, "I temporarily yield control of Hawaii to the President of the United States." She never yielded it to the insurrectionist and the Republic.
Right. Exactly.
But I have to be honest, I was absolutely unaware that there was a restoration agreement. And, you know, this seems to be something that, for some mysterious reason, has not been reported all that much on the various resources that cover this story.
No, exactly. I actually wrote a law journal article out of the San Francisco School of Law, Journal of Law and Social Challenges, in 2008 that explained in detail that agreement of restoration and how the doctrine of estoppel in international law and U.S. federal law plays a really big part in that. Because for myself, I didn't know either. I mean, I'm a former captain in the Army, and I'm not a political activist. I'm just operating on information at hand. You might just say we had the wrong intel. Thus, the operations were faulty in the operations plan. So it's really just intel. It's just information that we didn't know, but yet it was there. And it wasn't hidden. This information, because I'm a political scientist, so I specialize in international relations and public law. It's fully disclosed in the presidential messages by President Cleveland. The first one was sent to Congress on December 18th. The second one was sent on January 13th, 1894. It was the January 13th that addressed the restoration agreement. It was December 18th that addressed the temporary assignment of executive power, temporarily and conditionally.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're probably already aware, of course, of United States Public Law 103-150. And for those of our audience who are not familiar with it, on November 23rd, 1993, President Bill Clinton signed this public law, which acknowledged and admitted the illegal actions committed by the United States in that overthrow of the legitimate government of Hawaii, and acknowledged legally the Hawaiian people never surrendered their sovereignty to the United States of America. And this is a very important situation. I think Bill Clinton intended this to be kind of politically advisable and polite, and, gee, we're really sorry. But a lot of people here in Hawaii have taken this to heart, saying that the entire legal foundation for Hawaii being a state of the United States is basically undermined by this. The plebiscite vote that led to statehood was incomplete. It was supposed to include three options: independence, continuing as a territory, and becoming a state. And the option to go back to an independent republic was not included on the ballot. There was a lot of games being played with the petitions regarding statehood, where the U.S. government got all the petitions that were signed in favor of statehood. There were many more petitions signed opposing statehood that wound up sitting in a government warehouse and weren't even discovered and made public until just a few years ago. So this is a very, very ugly situation. And the reason I bring it up on what is basically a national radio show now is because this kind of shortchanging, bypassing of the law with regard to statehood is not unique to Hawaii. There are issues with Alaska's statehood. There are issues with the way Texas and California were made into states. The U.S. government, which is always proclaiming itself to be a champion of the rule of law, basically when it comes to what they themselves want, the rule of law is very, very often set aside. And even before my wife and I moved here to Hawaii about 11 years ago, I was trading emails with Bumpy Kanahele, and we know Leon Hsu. There are people who are saying, look, our republic got stolen from us. A sentiment that even people on the mainland are now becoming familiar with, as Wall Street steals our republic away from us. And they want it back. They want their own home back. And if the U.S. government, basically, what is the possible outcome of this lawsuit going to be?
Okay, before I get there, though, Mike, let me share with you another perspective, but this one is through public law, through separation of powers, the basic rule of law dealing with government actions. Okay, a lot of people base a lot of emphasis, or they put a lot of emphasis on the apology law. Actually, that's not correct, and let me explain that. The apology actually took place by the President of the United States through his ambassador, Albert Willis, when he met with the Queen on November 13, 1893 at the U.S. Embassy. There's transcripts that was part of the presidential message to Congress in December of 1893 that clearly shows this. And let me back up first, okay? Because Hawaii is an independent state in 1893 when the intervention took place, the only representative of the United States in foreign relations is the president through his diplomat or military. He's the sole representative of the United States. Congress and the courts are limited to U.S. territory. You know, the plenary power of Congress cannot extend beyond the borders of the United States. Now, when the president, through the Secretary of State, directed the U.S. ambassador to begin negotiations with the Queen for settlement on November 13th, that is when the ambassador, on behalf of the president, said that the president sincerely regrets what has taken place. He apologized, and that he needs to do what is proper and legal, and his obligation must restore the government back to what it was before the U.S. troops landed. And that was the basis of the restoration agreement. So you have that. Okay, now, that's strictly between the United States president and a foreign head of state, okay, in negotiations which they created into an executive agreement. Now, Congress starts to get involved in this in 1894 by passing two separate resolutions by the House and Senate in 1894, basically hog-tying the president from fulfilling his obligation to restore the government and administer the law. So the president, President Cleveland, was rendered a lame duck from 1894 until 1897 when the new president came in, William McKinley. Now, these individuals changed their name to the Republic of Hawaii, who were their insurgents, and never received amnesty from the Queen, so they're still insurgents. They go ahead and they send a group of people to Washington, D.C., and they sign a second attempt to transfer Hawaii by treaty, a treaty of cession, and that was signed on June 16, 1897. The protest that you refer to, those signature petitions, were put together between in September of 1897, between September and December of 1897, because the U.S. Senate was going to reconvene in December of 1897 to take up that treaty that was signed in June. What was delivered to the Senate by Senator Hoar from Massachusetts, because he agreed when he met with the Hawaiian diplomats, he would read into the record those petitions. So 28,269 signatures were read into the record protesting annexation. The annexation, the treaty, was unable to be ratified, and by March of 1898, the treaty is dead. So Hawaii is still an independent state, even though the shenanigans was going on with the insurgents, and those executive agreements are still binding. What ends up happening is the Spanish-American War breaks out the very next month, April of 1898. Battles have to be fought in not just in the Caribbean, which is Puerto Rico and Cuba, Spanish colonies, but Guam and the Philippines.
Okay, Dr. Tsai, hold that thought. We got to take a break for some commercials. Don't go away. We'll pick up on this spot with the Spanish-American War after these words from our sponsors.
Shocking, terrifying, but very truthful and revealing. Finally, a documentary on the horrifying results of unopposed estrogen. Estrogen dominance. Are we writing our own epitaph? I urge you to go to www.republicbroadcasting.org. Click on the HealthLink America banner and watch the documentary, The Disappearing Male. To my knowledge, this is the first documentary about the threat that unopposed estrogen poses to our survival as a species. It's a real eye-opener. But the documentary gives no solution to the problem. We have the solution. If we don't get the progesterone message to the younger generation, especially the young women, our very survival is in jeopardy. Again, that website is www.republicbroadcasting.org. Click on the HealthLink America banner. After viewing, please visit our website, www.healthlinkamerica.com.
What really gets in the way of your goals and dreams? Time? Money? Education? Well, if it's all of the above, Ashworth College is for you. Ashworth can help you achieve your goals by letting you study at your own pace, online, anywhere, anytime. Your computer is your classroom. With programs as low as $39 a month, Ashworth College is one of the most affordable online schools out there. Just $39 a month. Plus, Ashworth offers over 100 nationally accredited college programs, such as criminal justice, healthcare, technology, and business. You could earn as much as $300,000 more than those without an associate's degree. No high school diploma? Well, Ashworth even offers high school completion programs. So call an Ashworth Career Advisor right now, toll free at 1-866-504-8173. That's 1-866-504-8173. Or go to ashworthtraining.com.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Dr. Keanu Sai, an expert on Hawaii's political history and how it got stolen from the Hawaiian people and turned into the 50th state. We're talking about the history of Hawaii as it relates to the outbreak of the Spanish-American War, which my understanding is would have brought the Hague Convention into effect, requiring the U.S. government, while it occupied the Hawaiian Islands, to enforce Hawaiian law rather than that of the United States or any of the other belligerent nations.
Mike.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, so where I finished off is, so the war has broken out, and the Spanish have colonies not just in the Caribbean, but also in the Pacific, Guam and the Philippines. Just a couple of weeks after the war broke out, Admiral Dewey of the U.S. Navy defeated the Spanish fleet in Manila Bay and began the occupation of the Philippines on May 1st, 1898. Word gets back to Washington, and that is when Representative Francis Newlands from Nevada, he's a Democrat, he's going to submit a resolution to the House Committee on Foreign Affairs to annex Hawaii. In this committee, you have testimony then given by Captain Alfred Mahan from the U.S. Naval War College. He's also kind of known for the author of American Imperialism and the changing of doctrine of increasing the size of the Navy. Also, General Schofield is giving testimony, and each of them are saying that they need to preoccupy Hawaii before another country occupies us because they needed to protect the west coast of the United States. They're looking at Hawaii as an outpost. So the resolution then leaves the House, goes to the House, leaves the committee, then it goes to the House for a vote. And during the vote, Representative Ball from Texas, he says that you cannot annex a foreign state by passing an internal law. So everybody understood that they could not pass a law annexing a foreign state. And response was, well, we're the United States. We can do it. If they don't like it, they go to war against us. And when they go to war, then what they do is they get a treaty of conquest, which is a treaty of cession, which is precisely what happened in Texas. The joint resolution is what sparked the Mexican-American War, followed up by the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo that transferred everything north of the Rio Grande. Now, when it moved from the House, even though they passed it because they're supporting the president and in wartime, it moves to the Senate. And Senator Pettigrew, they're all reiterating the same points that we cannot pass a law that has no force and effect beyond the borders claiming to have annexed a foreign country. In fact, Senator White from California, Stephen White from California, he went on the record and said the House claims that there has been a cession, and he says there has been none. And this was actually reported in the New York Times in 1898, June 21st. But nevertheless, they still voted for it, and because the United States was at war with Spain, and then the president signed into law in July of 1898. Now, the formal ceremonies that took place in occupying Hawaii was on August 12, 1898. Now, at this point, the occupation begins of a neutral country over the protests of Hawaiian subjects and the Queen in order to fight the Spanish in Guam and the Philippines. Now, the Hague Convention does not come into play yet because this is 1898. The Hague Convention is actually 1899. What comes into play here is called the Lieber Code. And the Lieber Code specifically says that when you're in an occupied territory, you administer the laws of the occupied state. So the Lieber Code was then later replaced after the U.S. signed the Hague Convention in 1899. So while the U.S. troops were in Spain and occupying Guam and the Philippines, they were actually administering Spanish law while fighting was taking place in Puerto Rico and Cuba. Now, after the war ended, the U.S. was supposed to have gotten out of the Hawaiian territory as a neutral state, but it didn't. And that is when the U.S. Congress, in 1900, 2 years later, passed what is called the Organic Act, creating a government for the territory of Hawaii. The problem we have here is that there is no connection between Hawaii as a sovereign state at the time and the United States because Congress could no more annex Hawaii by passing a joint resolution in 1898 than it could pass a joint resolution annexing Canada tomorrow. So also, 2 years later then, Congress could no more create a government for the territory of Hawaii, no more than it can create a government for the for Quebec, because it's limited to U.S. territory. Then we come into 1959. All 1959 is a transformation of the territorial government into a state government. It's still operating under the so-called plenary power of Congress. What undermines all of this is not what they said or did not say in the vote for statehood. The issue is Congress has no authority beyond the borders of the United States absent a treaty transferring a former sovereign territory into the territory of the United States. So in the case of Alaska, here's an example for Alaska. Alaska was transferred by treaty, a treaty of cession in 1867 from the Russians. Through that transfer, that's what gave the Congress plenary power to enact legislation, which later they created an Organic Act creating a government for Alaska and thus later the statehood. Now, the questions on the process of statehood, those are questions and arguments made under U.S. constitutional law. That's not international law, because Alaska became a part of the United States when Russia transferred it. The case for Hawaii, we were never part of the United States, so what has happened since 1898, there is clear evidence that Hawaii was portrayed as if it was transferred by a treaty and a treaty of cession when it wasn't. And that's why the
apology... Dr. Tsai, I hate to do this. We got to take another commercial break. We'll have 20 minutes on the other side to wrap this up here, but we got to take another break for commercials. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, "Help, I've fallen and I can't get up," protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of microplant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Don't answer it!
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information, 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
On the fifth day of global warming, Al Gore gave to me $5 harvest. $4 guests, 3 failed automakers, 2 melting ice caps, and the Fear Mongering documentary.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking with Dr. Keanu Sai. We're talking about the history of Hawaii and how it was literally stolen to make it into a state. And if I could briefly summarize up to this point, there were three, basically the United States military helped overthrow Queen Liliuokalani. Liliuokalani temporarily transferred control of her republic to President Cleveland, who then transferred it back. The new provisional government refused to recognize Grover Cleveland's transfer back, and then Sanford Dole, the self-declared provisional governor of Hawaii, transferred sovereignty of Hawaii to the United States, even though it was not legally his to give. Then we have the United States Congress annexing Hawaii by joint resolution, and if I recall correctly, in 1988, the United States Justice Department confirmed Congress does not have the authority to annex foreign territory by joint resolution, and that therefore the entire legal basis for Hawaii belonging to the United States is a complete and utter fraud. So if you would pick up where you left off and sort of finish this up, and I'd like to get to the point, what possible relief are we looking at if the court rules in your favor?
Finish off and then answer the question. Now, let me just qualify, though, the executive power. Because the Queen was a constitutional monarch. She wasn't an absolute monarch. It was a constitutional monarch with executive power. That executive power was temporarily assigned to the President And then the second agreement is for him to make to restore the government. The president didn't return the executive power. That office still has it. And he still has not restored the government. That office still has that responsibility. So Sanford Dole didn't transfer anything because nothing was given back. So to date, that executive power is still within the office of the president. That's what binds the successive presidents of Cleveland to execute and administer Hawaiian Kingdom law, which is the basis of my lawsuit. So now we can get to the lawsuit.
Okay.
What it's doing is the lawsuit is exposing a lot of history that people were not aware of. That's what it's definitely doing. And it's providing it through the appropriate lens of what is called the rule of law or legal interpretations. Prior to this, it was really just politics and power really used to interpret, meaning I have a bigger club, therefore I have you. Well, nobody's denying that. But the fact is, there's a difference between kidnapping and adoption. Hawaii was kidnapped in 1893, and it was considered adopted today, but it's still kidnapping. So once we get away from the idea of adoption, we start to understand what is kidnapping, and that's where we get into the laws of occupation, the Lieber Code, the Hague Convention, the executive agreements, and most recent court cases. 2003, United States, American Insurance Association versus Garamendi at the U.S. Supreme Court in 2003 mm-hmm. qualified that executive agreements do not need ratification from the Senate or approval of Congress to have the force and effect of a treaty, which means Congress cannot pass a law refuting or undermining an executive agreement in foreign relations because the executive agreement is outside of the confines of congressional authority, which is limited to U.S. territory. It can only repeal an executive agreement if it was involving a rule of U.S. law within U.S. territory. So we're still back to the executive agreement. Now, what I'm asking for the court to do is to also make a determination, because under U.S. foreign relations law, it states specifically that a country is obligated to repeal a law illegally annexing foreign territory. So all I'm doing is bringing in the point of the joint resolution as part of this complaint, aside from my injury, and it's to ask the court to declare that the joint resolution of annexation is unconstitutional. Unconstitutional in the sense that it violates and it's an encroachment upon the executive power of the president to faithfully execute treaties in international relations. That's the angle I'm coming from. Now, another historical fact that's being illuminated here is that Hawaii was never part of the United States. And what has come about through a recent motion I submitted, I needed to add President Barack Obama back on as a defendant. Well, President Barack Obama cannot claim sovereign immunity by virtue of a Supreme Court case, Nixon versus Fitzgerald, which says the president has sovereign immunity from civil lawsuits, because I draw attention upon the fact that President Obama was not born in the United States, therefore he's not natural born. He was born outside of the United States, but he's an American by parentage, but he's not an American by being natural born.
Forgive me for interrupting here. I think that this is a very risky area to go into. I basically studied this issue myself, and I think Obama was actually born here, and the reasons for the questioning about his birth certificate.
I'm not denying he wasn't born here. I'm actually saying he was born here. I'm not making a birth cert argument. What I'm saying is,
okay,
he was born at Kapi'olani Hospital. That's where I was born. Now, being born within an occupied state, which is Hawaii was never part of the United States. So the provision of natural born under Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution is
yes,
the issue.
I see what you're
I'm not talking about where he was. I personally think he was born at Kapi'olani. I was there too. But he's still an American, but he's an American by parentage because the mom is from Kansas. And
yes,
she was natural born in Kansas. So people can acquire citizenship through jus soli, which is born on the soil, or jus sanguinis, which is of parents born abroad. So I'm not challenging President Obama's nationality as an American. He is. But for my case, I had to bring him back in because he's still administering federal law within the territory of the Hawaiian Kingdom in violation of the executive agreement. That's why I needed to pull him back in and explain why Nixon versus Fitzgerald cannot be used as a bar to prevent me from putting him back on the complaint. Now, it's going to be left up to the U.S. attorney in Washington, D.C. to address that. And that's all part of the pleading. So these are all allegations and facts that are being presented in the pleadings, which I appreciate because it takes out the, you know, the emotions. It's just, hey, is Hawaii a part of the United States or it's not? And it's not a matter of, well, Hawaii wants to break away from the United States. Well, you cannot secede if you were never ceded. You know, that you can't get a divorce if you're never married. So the issue is the marriage, not the prospect of an idea of secession or divorce. I don't go there. And as a former officer, I'm just dealing with the facts and also as a political scientist, which gives now the U.S. attorney to respond. And they have been responding, so I encourage people to go to the website where I update all the pleadings that have been filed since June 1st all the way to date. And it's a very, very interesting case to follow. In fact, some law schools are actually following it.
Can we have that website URL for our listeners?
Yes, that would be if they go to HawaiianKingdom.org. So one word is HawaiianKingdom.org, O-R-G. Go to the top right. You're going to see a link there that says Tsai versus Obama. Hit that link. It'll take you to a website with all the explanation of the case. It actually also has videos that people can watch, as well as PowerPoints and presentations that I give so that people can get a better understanding of what's going on. I pretty much use the work that I, the presentations I do as I teach this in political science and Hawaiian studies. It's strictly historical.
Well, it looks wonderful. You have, in fact, filled in a lot of gaps in my own understanding about Hawaii's history. And I'm looking at your page right now. I'm going to link it to my own website, whatreallyhappened.com. Hopefully you will get some interest and some traffic from that. And I'd love to have you back on the show at some point in the future to bring us up to date on that. And I will be in touch with you via email over some other things I'd like to share with you. So thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Mike, for inviting me on your show.
Anything else you'd like to say to our listeners before you sign off?
No, just in Hawaiian we say ahui ho. Until next time.
Ahui ho, and thank you. And mahalo for the phone call. We'll talk to you again.
Thank you. Aloha.
All right. That was Dr. Keanu Tsai, and I am putting up the link to his web page with the arguments and pleadings. And this is an issue because it's very easy to support a position when it coincides with your own needs and agenda. But when you understand that a great wrong has been committed against an entire people, and the righting of that wrong could be a serious inconvenience, that becomes the real test of your commitment to the rule of law and to principle. And it is very, very obvious, even before I talked to Dr. Tsai, just from my own researches on the matter, that the people of Hawaii were robbed. They had their nation taken away from them to create the unsinkable battleship Hawaii, and it was all about greed and sugar and avoidance of taxes. And the people of Hawaii were literally reduced to second-class citizens on their own homeland through this corruption here. All right, we're coming up on the end of our show. I want to change topics again. I want to talk a few minutes about WikiLeaks. The organized PR campaign, email spam all over the place, harangues in those online websites that are supporting him, like Huffington Post, have succeeded in getting Julian Assange voted Time Magazine's Person of the Year through the online poll. Now, Time Magazine has the right to choose somebody else. I think they may go with it because, remember, Time Magazine was making this guy out to be a hero before he'd ever actually done anything. WikiLeaks was created at the end of 2006, January 2007. Time Magazine said this is the place to go if you're a whistleblower. And WikiLeaks hadn't released anything at that point. WikiLeaks at that time may have just been a honey trap to get real whistle various governments and corporations they were blowing the whistles on. Now, meanwhile, in an attempt to bolster the credibility of WikiLeaks, they're screaming about the Espionage Act. We've got Benjamin Witz, a legal analyst with the Brookings Institution, basically going on about how we've got to prosecute the whistleblowers and Assange for the disclosure of information to persons not authorized to receive them. And of course, my response to that is, where was all the, when it was these representatives from AIPAC that were disclosing information to persons not authorized to receive them? But in that case, oh, we'll charge them with something that carries a lower penalty and is harder to prove. And basically, they got a get out of jail free card over at AIPAC. Now, if you're going to have an espionage act, you've got to basically bring it to bear on everybody who violates it. Or if you're going to give Assange, if you're going to give AIPAC a get out of jail free card, then you can't very well justify bringing it against Julian Assange. And I'm not defending him because I do think he's a very clever propaganda operation. But the double standard that's on display here underscores the fact that we're not dealing with law and logic and facts here. It is simply screaming of agenda until everybody agrees with you. Now, over in Great Britain, as you know, there is a mounting hue and cry for a true, full inquiry into the death of Dr. David Kelly, who seriously embarrassed the Blair administration by going public and saying that the claims about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction were somewhat exaggerated, which is putting it politely. We know in hindsight that Dr. David Kelly was absolutely right. We now know about the dodgy dossier. We know about the plagiarized report, plagiarized from a 12-year-old student thesis that was hopelessly outdated. We know about shaping the propaganda to fit the agenda. We know about all of that stuff. David Kelly sounded the warning and he wound up dead. There was an inquiry, supposedly, that was basically kept secret and said, yes, he committed suicide. We're now finding out that the man who shut down the full inquest into the death of Dr. David Kelly was Tony Blair's roommate. All buddy, buddy, buddy. So the cover-up of Dr. David Kelly's death was done on the orders of Charles Falconer, who at the time was Britain's Lord Chancellor, the cabinet secretary responsible for the courts. Falconer was once a roommate of Tony Blair. So we're starting to see these little hidden connections where, you know, the roommate buddy says, ooh, I got to protect my old, you know, roommate or whatever you're going to call it. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Zane in Washington. Aloha, Zane. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. I wanted to update you a little bit. I called a few weeks ago about a currency that's based on these gold shorts at the COMEX. And the idea was to turn these contracts into a currency that we could use here in the community. But as it turns out, it appears that it's kind of elitist. There aren't really all that many people that, I mean, the common folks just don't own these contracts. So
no,
what
they
I've done,
don't. And the problem with that is we need a currency that's based on a unit of value, not a unit of debt. And a short sale contract, That's another form of debt, and it's subject to manipulation. And I don't want to base a currency on anything that's under the control of banks and private financial institutions. We need to go back to government issuing the currency, spending it into circulation, and taxing it back after it's gone through society, fueling commerce. And
Right. Well, yeah, I do have a currency that's designed that way exactly. I mean, I don't want to have a currency that's designed to fail, obviously. I have a currency that's based on labor. But, you know, still, I think the idea...
That has worked before in history, by the way.
Yeah, right. And the campaign is called Fight for Work, Mike. So the idea is to get people to perform service in the community and to be paid for that. We start up small, just 3 hours a week, and they're paid 10 krites per hour to do this work.
Mm-hmm.
And they can use this money to buy and sell services throughout the community to anyone who's willing to accept the labor of the community as payment for their goods and services.
That has also worked before. In fact, there's a very interesting story about a newspaper man who started buying supplies for his newspaper using promissory notes for free advertising. And it began to be used as a currency within that community and was considered more trustworthy than the U.S. notes, and it actually became a de facto monetary unit within the community. Communities can create and use their own currency. If they get a little too uppity, the government comes in and says, no, you must use the Federal Reserve notes, which is what happened to the Liberty dollar and the Ron Paul dollar. But a lot of communities do, in fact, do it. I've shown on the show before the Catalina dollar and the Maui dollar and all these other so-called trade dollars. They are used and exchanged as currencies and monetary units. You just can't pay your taxes with them.
Can I give out my website real quick?
Can you email it to me and I'll take a look at it? We got to let you go. We got to take a commercial break. We'll be right back.
After my second heart attack, I knew I needed more help than I had. That's when Extendivite came into my life. Made from garlic, cayenne, and five other herbs, I started to feel better in a very short time. My name's Don Wiskin, and I'm here because of Extendivite.
Extendivite gave me more energy than I've had in years. I am the only one in my house right now that's not sick from colds or flus. And I owe that all to Extendivite. My name is Rick, and I'm healthy because of Extendivite. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit the website at heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The Berkeleyte's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeleyte, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeleyte is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeleyte, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny and that the banks know this and hope you don't find out? Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I did put Dr. Tsai's website, webpage, up at whatreallyhappened.com. There are several sovereignty movements here in the Hawaiian Islands, and we've talked to some of these people in times past. But Dr. Tsai does bring up an important point. Under the Constitution, the authority of Congress stops at the border. Foreign policy exists solely with the executive branch through diplomacy and through the military. It therefore follows that Congress has no legal ground to pass a law criminalizing activity in other countries outside the United States, and yet they clearly have been doing so. That our government has exceeded our constitutional bounds, I don't think there's any question about that. A couple more stories before we finish up the show here today. Over in Germany, been a rather interesting incident. There was a gentleman who had a teenage daughter, 17 years old, who was upset because the daughter was being friends with, in the most intimate way possible, a 57-year-old guy. And he went to the police and said, can you do something about it? And the police said no. Now, the age of consent issue in Germany is a little fuzzy. Okay? Because absolute age of consent is 18. But age of consent can be lower than that under certain circumstances and with certain guidelines. And it's very, very complicated. But the police basically said, no, if this 57-year-old guy wants to bop your 17-year-old daughter, there's nothing we can do about it. So the man took a couple of his friends, and they basically removed a very delicate portion of the offender's anatomy. And because a great deal of bleeding was involved, the father is now looking at attempted murder charges. I'm having a hard time finding fault with the father. Because, you know, 57-year-old men really ought not to be fooling around with 17-year-old girls. That's just not right. And a 17-year-old girl, if she's going to be having fun, you know, get together with somebody that if you are lucky enough to have a wonderful marriage with, like I have with Claire, that you're both going to spend most of your lives together and not have this really ancient person that you're infatuated with, you know, die in a couple of years. And I know in this country we have these really old rich guys who've got these really young trophy brides, and we sort of do a nudge, nudge, wink, wink, but we understand there's money involved there. And there's greed and everything. But we also understand that there's something inherently unhealthy about really old guys going after functionally children for sexual purposes. And I don't know how this is going to play out. If there were a jury trial involved, I don't think there's a jury on this planet would convict the father. But sadly, in Germany, this kind of case is going to go before a judge, so we'll see what happens there. Finally, there's a story that's on the front page of whatreallyhappened.com. The headline reads, I wined and dined New York Times and Wall Street Journal for favorable coverage, basically saying that a health insurance insider has gone public saying that you can bribe the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal for positive news coverage. And of course, anybody who remembers CNBC's disastrous prognostications about Lehman Brothers or the Russia Today video about how Israel routinely bribes the American media to report the news favorable to Israel, this is not going to come as a surprise. But it is one more reminder why the corporate media has to be viewed with a great deal of skepticism, and why you all like to come over here to whatreallyhappened.com and the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back tomorrow, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Until tomorrow, careful of that snow and ice on the road, and aloha.